you can first just state where you are. 06-1469 versus Rodney Harris.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I am Attorney Michael Schmidt, and I represent Rodney Harris in this appeal. On February 3rd of 2006, Mr. Harris argued that a reasonable sentence would be a 12-year sentence or less, and that a guideline sentence of 15 to 20 years would be excessive and more than necessary to meet the goals of 3553. The district court sentenced Mr. Harris to 200 months, or about 16 and a half years. The issue on appeal was Rodney Harris' sentence unreasonable and excessive, given Title 18, Section 3553A2, sentencing factors, and the rejected considerations for a non-guideline sentence or a downward departure.
Are you asking for a sentence below the guideline range?
Yes, Your Honor.
We start with a presumption that a guideline range is reasonable. Okay, what special facts would justify departing from that range?
Your Honor, in this case, it would be looking at the reasonableness of the gun factor and the fact that we're looking at a mandatory minimum penalty of 120 months. But the fact that the gun went off, we're adding a consecutive sentence of another 80 months. Actually doubling the sentence.
Here the gun was fired.
Yes, Your Honor. But it's our contention that bringing the weapon to the offense, the knowledge that there is a weapon involved in the offense, was the act that needs to be punished, because any time a weapon is brought to an offense, it can go off. And I think if we really were to look at the circumstances, I don't think it was an intentional firing so much. I think it was the fact it was there and it was mishandled and it went off. And so I think the United States correctly points out it's the knowledge component. And since an armed bank robbery is always going to involve a weapon like this, the double counting is somewhat unreasonable. And here we have a situation where Mr. Harris is facing 200 months, double the period of time, because of that double counting. In a nutshell, well, this is a guideline sentence subject to a rebuttable presumption in the Seventh Circuit that it's reasonable. The sentence is not immune to an argument that it's not reasonable. He makes a number of arguments for a shorter sentence than the guidelines provide. And I've touched upon an aspect of one of them already. We're looking at a situation where the government argues that Mr. Harris's crime was escalating, but if we look, the defendant had not had any further significant criminal behavior with convictions since the time of this offense, despite the fact that he was not apprehended for a very long period of time. Thus, it appears more appropriate to look at the change in his behavior as a positive change, made without additional structure that comes from incarceration. It appeared to internalize his need for correction and made changes necessary in order to proceed in a proper manner.
It's a pretty egregious case, isn't it? I mean, he's stalking this pregnant woman.
I think the facts
on it. She gets shot by his co-conspirator. Is this pretty?
I think that the facts and the situation, especially as it affected the victim, are very serious. Very serious. Mr. Harris, of course, was not acting alone. And Mr. Harris's involvement in this matter might be somewhat mitigating, not looking necessarily for a role change in this offense, but he was not the gunman, as I recall, in this matter. And I think that He was also, it was fairly clear from the PSI, that he was not the leader in this matter. And I think that when one considers the fact that he is somewhat of a person that goes along with things, a person without a strong father figure in his background, it was more than a person being in the wrong place at the wrong time, but perhaps it wasn't containing all the egregious elements that it might appear to on its surface.
First of all, you argued for a reduction in the sentence and said because he hadn't committed crimes in the last 2 years, is that right?
No, I said that he hadn't
from the time of the original crime.
The time of his offense, he had not had significant criminal behavior that resulted in...
But then in your reply brief, didn't you admit that he did commit other crimes during that time period?
I think that he was... he had a conviction that came down in that time period, but I think that the behavior preceded...
But isn't that the important part, the conviction?
Well, the conviction...
On the one hand, you argue that he didn't commit any crimes that time. On the other hand, you argue that they own up to the fact that he did, that he was convicted during that time of crimes.
The conviction and the sentence came down, Your Honor, during that period of time, but I don't recall that the behavior...
In your reply brief.
Right. I don't recall that the behavior...
No, but he was convicted, and that's the important part.
Well, a conviction subsequently does not reflect the behavior that happened during the interim period of time. It will reflect the behavior of the prior time at the time of the offense, Your Honor. So I don't think that necessarily shoots a hole in that argument. Mr. Harris would point out that he had extraordinary status as an abuse victim and that his overstated criminal history category all combined to make the guideline sentence excessive. Looking at the factors in 3553A2, we have to look to see if there would be a sufficient sentence to protect the public from further crimes of this defendant. And the defendant would submit that a 10-year mandatory penalty would be sufficient to accomplish that goal, and adding the additional time makes the sentence at some point excessive. 3553A2 sub D requires that the sentence be sufficient to meet the defendant's educational needs and other needs. That probably isn't affected one way or another by the whether the sentence is 120 months or 200 months. But 18 U.S.C. 3553 A sub 6 indicates there should not be unwarranted sentencing disparities, and Mr. Harris is being sentenced disproportionately more severely than defendants who discharge a firearm in a non-bank related matter. He is also being sentenced disproportionately more severely than the defendant who robs a bank and has the good fortune that no firearm discharges. He is also being sentenced more severely than a defendant who, with a similar history of being a victim of extraordinary abuse, does receive the downward departure and or an adjustment to his criminal history category. Under all the circumstances, it was necessary to depart downward from the guidelines or sentence outside of the guidelines in order to meet the mandatory requirements enumerated in 18 U.S.C. 3553 A sub 2. The failure to depart in the sentence itself does not pass a reasonableness test without a reduction to reduce what otherwise is an excessive sentence. The defendant is showing, I think, that his criminal behavior was abating. The crimes they did commit were within a 17-month period, by and large, when he was very young, between ages of, I think it was 16 and 18. And so... we're looking at a situation where this defendant is facing more serious penalties than he reasonably should. I disagree with the United States Attorney in the comment that while a sentence for a firearm offense indeed must run consecutive to a sentence for the underlying predicate offense, it's not necessarily the case that a reasonable sentence will be
the addition of those two sentences. The second sentence might be a shorter sentence. Could be a day, could be a year, could be something under what the guidelines would provide. And so it's possible to have a reasonable sentence in a case like this that would be less than the guidelines provide. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gonzalez.
The government would again ask this court to affirm the sentence issued by the district court in this case. This case was a sentence within the guideline range and is to be presumed reasonable. In this case, the defendant signed a plea agreement where it clearly stated that the 924C application would be consecutive to the underlying offense. He received a pre-sentence report where he didn't object to the calculation as calculated by the probation department. But when the district court finally issues its sentence, at the end of the day, he's ultimately dissatisfied with the 200-month sentence and claims that it is unreasonable. The district court listened to all the arguments as presented by the defendant, and as the court so eloquently put, at the end of the day, this type of conduct is the most serious type of an offense, a violent nature against another person, and noted that in this case the victim, on top of everything else, was a pregnant woman.
I've got a jurisdictional question here. This credit union is federally insured, so obviously go in with a gun and rob it, there's federal jurisdiction. Here, it's off-premises. The victim apparently works at the credit union, but she is not working at the time. She's in the parking lot, apparently, where she lives on Forest Home Avenue. Where's the federal jurisdiction? Why is this a state offense?
I know there's
some keys here.
That I believe creates the jurisdiction. They're there after those keys. Those keys are property of the federally insured financial institution. They want those keys so that they can assist them in the ultimate.
Was the jurisdictional issue ever raised in the district court? I don't see it was. Have you ever seen a case where there's federal jurisdiction in a situation like this?
I have not, but I can understand.
I'll tell you, maybe you're right, but I haven't seen it.
The keys being property of the federally insured financial institution, I believe, is how the government pursued the matter. Ultimately, the court sentenced Mr. Harris to a sentence within the guideline range, which was reasonable based upon the factors as elicited by the court. Unless there are any further questions, I have at rest on the strength of the government's brief.
There is. Nobody ever expects the Spanish Inquisition, but we're going to ask the two of you to file supplemental memorandum on the jurisdictional issue that Judge Evans just knew about. How much time would you like? A year or two? What would you like?
We're prepared to comply with any order of the court.
All right. 15 days. Can you do it? We'll send a little order out.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Schmidt, you used your time, but if you have anything that you feel is very important to add, I will give you 1 minute. Thank you. Now, you obtained in this case as well. What are you doing in Wisconsin taking these cases?
Thank you very much. You have the thanks of the court. You both have the thanks. Okay.